Welcome to Module 9, Closing the Sale. The first half of this module will focus on 17 different ways to close the sale, and the second half will focus on upsells, add-on selling, and a number of other ways to receive a bigger share of a customer's wallet while still providing value-added benefits.
Easiest thing in the world to do is close a sale, if everything is done properly up to that point. But if you're trying to close a deal before the relationship is built, before you covered the information, before you covered the objections, before you've covered the skepticism and things like that, it's pretty tough to close the sale. So it's a matter, that's why you have a sales process that you lead up to, and closing the sale is a very natural thing. So to close the sale, the person must have two major skills. You got to have the ability to recognize a buying signal and the skill to use the right closing method. Because there's certain closing methods. What's a verbal buy-in signal? Well, admitting that he or she needs or likes what you sell. Said, I really like that. That's a buy-in signal. And somebody says, I really like it. Thinking beyond the purchase asks questions mentally already in the process of buying. So let's take these three and take a look at them. Admitting he or she needs, likes what you sell. Here's some of the examples. They say, I guess I should be buying some insurance with the new changes in my life. That's a buy-in signal. I guess I should be doing something with all the changes in my life. It does make sense that we buy from a local software supplier. That's a buy-in signal. Yes, I would agree I should have a car that can easily hold my entire family comfortably. Being close to the school really does make the difference when deciding between these two homes. Those are all buy-in signals, and that's he or she likes what you sell. Thinking beyond the purchase is, am I going to be able to increase the amount of this insurance in a few months if I want to? What have they just done? They've put themselves, they've already purchased in their mind, and they're saying, if this happens, can I do this? If I take this home and my husband isn't happy, can I bring it back? Ever get that kind of thing? If I take it home, can I bring it back? What have they done? They've already taken it home. That's what they've done. My sister's going to be shocked when I drive up in this new BMW. Or if I drive up in a new BMW, they've already gone and showed the sister the BMW or the Ford. I can see this room done in pink. It will be beautiful. Asking specific questions. Suppose my husband does not like the car when I get home. Can I bring it back? And that's going beyond the purchase, but it's with a question. When I call you in 2 years, am I going to be able to upgrade this networking system fairly easily? Do you deliver to the south side? That's a buy-in question. Can I get cash out of this savings instrument if I really need it? They've already gone into it and they're asking a question. Mentally already in the process of buying. Examples is, I see myself paying off this loan in 6 months, not 12 months. My husband is probably going to be shocked when he sees me this expensive new outfit. Probably not. We'll have to figure out where we can find the budget to do this. Nonverbal buy-in signals goes back to a product several times. So if you sell product, they're in a store and they keep walking back and looking at a specific thing. That's a good buy-in signal. They keep going back to it. They go back to certain pages of a proposal. They keep flipping back to certain pages. Continual positive body language gestures during the presentation. You're getting lots of this stuff. A change in attitude, and that's always a good one. There's nothing like having somebody that doesn't seem to be on side, and all of a sudden there's a flipping attitude. And it's a darn good time to close. So it's a change of attitude, or they take and they examine something much more closely. Definitely, we're in the process of buying. When to close? When a customer gives a verbal or nonverbal signal, after their agreement on several features, or after you've restated the benefits at the end of a presentation, while showing or handling a product, or listening to something like music, sound of an engine, or whatever it may be. There are 17 different closes here I'm going to take you through. And these will work in most products and most services that we sell. The alternative close. And let me say this about closes. They are not manipulation techniques. Closes have been around since the earth has been around, or at least since there's human beings have been around. My children did not go to closing school, but when they were little, they would wake up on a Saturday morning and they'd come running into the bedroom and they'd say, Dad, where are we going today? We're going to the beach, Stanley Park, or the movies. Now, what kind of close is that? That's the alternative close. They didn't say, Dad, are you going to take us out today? They said, Dad, where are we going today? The beach, Stanley Park, or the movies? These are natural things, and all it is when we put the names on them is that through observation we say, how did that guy put that deal together so easily? So look what he did is he gave us some alternatives. So how are we going to teach it? Let's call it the alternative close. That's all it is. And these are natural things that people do. So this is where you give options and alternative. Is it the policy for the $250,000 that you want, or do you want to go for the $500,000? That's a close. It's the alternative close. Do you want the corrugated or the non-corrugated? Which do you want, the corrugated or the non-corrugated? Do you want the envelopes that have padding or the ones without padding? And by the way, closing on an objection, I was doing some work with a packaging company, and they had envelopes that were phenomenally well packaged. And we were out on one call, and the client said, there is no way we could send our stuff through the mail, and it'll make it through the mail without it getting smashed. So you know what the guy did? He said, give me the stuff. They took it, they packed it in the envelope, they sealed it, they put some stamps on it. He says, come. And they went and they mailed it. And he says, and if it arrives back, he said, let me say this before I mail. If it arrives back and this isn't damaged, will you buy from me? And the guy said, if it's not damaged, you got a deal. They sent it out and went through the mail system, come back. It was in perfect shape. He got the deal. What was that? Try and buy. It was the puppy dog close in another fashion, wasn't it? So that's the alternative close. The assumed close. You simply assume that the prospect's made up his mind. So the person gives you the buy-in, so you can say, look, we can install the software on your system right away for you. They said, no, I really like that. The person says, you know, I do like that system. We can have that in your business next Friday. Up and running. That's the assumed close. You don't say, look, are you sure you want to part with this $100,000? No, it can be in your business, up and running. The radio guy says to you, he says, okay, I'll tell you what. I can have you on the air by Friday afternoon. Or do you want to spend this $8,000? No, we can have you on the air Friday afternoon, okay? By Friday afternoon. The car can be ready by 4:30 p.m. this afternoon. The person says, so which one do you like? No, I really like this. I can have it ready by 4:30 for you. Ever done that? That's the assumed close. Minor decision close. This is where you move the sale forward to close on a minor decision rather than a major decision. Would delivery at 2 o'clock suit you? That's a minor decision, isn't it? It's not, you sure you want to part with all this money? It's a minor decision. Who do we need to train as the operator on this? Minor decision. Do you want weekly deliveries on Friday for this? That is a minor decision close. The courtesy close. This is where you give the client time and space to comfortably make a decision. This one works real good. It sounds to me like you two have a few more things to discuss. It's not fair that you have to discuss it in front of me. Why don't I just go for a coffee while you two sort things out, and in 15 minutes I'll come back and you can give me a decision. Another one would be, I'll be overseas for a week. Would that give you people time to discuss the issue to come to a decision? Closed a big deal with Siemens Industry and Energy on that one. And they were still discussing, and I said, look, I'm going overseas for 3 weeks. Is that time enough for you guys to make a decision? They said, Bill, when you get back, the decision will be made. You know what that's called? Courtesy close. Husband and wife trying to make up their mind. You're sitting across from them. A lot of people say, don't leave them alone. I say, leave them alone. Because somebody's ego is going to be on the line. And you know who's going to lose? Probably you. So you say, I'll tell you what. Sounds like you got more to discuss. I'm going to leave you, I'll go for coffee, then you can give me a decision. So it gives that person, gives those people time to breathe. The direct close. I like this one. This is where you put in time and you decide to get to the bottom line with a direct question. It works well with direct type people, like your controller types, your drivers, like the controllers and the promoter personality types. Timing and accurately reading the people are very important if you take and use this one. And that's where you just say to that person, listen, are you going to move ahead or aren't you? I've been out here 6 times. Are we going to do something or aren't we? That's a direct close. Can we get the paperwork going now? Should I arrange for delivery? Can we go ahead? And that's asking for it directly. Say, look, this is the third time you've been in that car for a test drive. Are you going to take it or aren't you? Nice direct question. Puppy dog close, we talked a little earlier about that. It's where you actually let the client try it, test it, and use it, and sample it before they buy. That's the puppy dog one. Let me put a new copier in your office for 3 weeks, let your staff try it, and you're not under any obligation to buy. That's just like sending the puppy dogs home. If you'd like me to, I would be glad to come to one of your senior management meetings and speak at no charge so you can actually experience my style and get a first-hand view of the types of content I can deliver. This will save both of us a lot of time. You and your team will know whether or not you want to utilize my service. What I'm really doing is giving you a test drive of what I can do. Test drives work. Car salesman could actually loan a long-term, I would think in a market like this that you actually do this. As a car salesperson could actually loan a long-term customer a car for the weekend to try it. Be sure your insurance covers this. A test drive is also a form of puppy dog close. Do you do that? with some of your clients? Yeah, some of the people that you've known for a while, you say, you just chuck them the keys and say, here, take it for the weekend, try it out. It works. May also be when you say, pay me for it, take it, and within a month you can bring it back and get a refund if you're not happy. That's a puppy dog close. Puppy dog close in a real estate, maybe let me list your house for 2 months. If you're not happy with the effort and results, you can give the listing to someone else. And there's the package in one. In banking, a banker could say, let me come in and analyze your situation, give you recommendations on the best way to finance this project. You're under no obligation. We do that all the time in our business. We get in for 1, 2, 3 days and do what we call an extraction. So they get to know us, we find out what the business is about, and usually from there, it works. A needs analysis in the financial services industry would be very similar. So let me do an analysis. The urgency close, this is where the salesperson presents a situation, a scenario, facts, factors, or benefits to the client that puts some urgency into the decision to buy. Now, the urgency close, be careful with it. It works extremely well if it's the truth. If it's a lie, it doesn't work that well. And a lot of people use the urgency close just as a technique to close somebody when they got 10 dozen sitting in the back and they say, it's the last one in stock. Now, I tell you, you're running a danger area because if I come in later, I hear somebody else got one and it's just the same and they got it a day later, I don't forget it. Because there's many ways you can close somebody and it doesn't necessarily have to be on the urgency close. If it's real, it works well. If I flip my schedule open and show you the people that have got me booked and I've only got those 2 days and if you want to move on it, then we better move on it pretty quick, that's the truth. If it is the last one I got in stock, you can usually push it pretty hard. This is the only black one with gold trim left in the city. As you know, they're very popular. I would really be unhappy to see you lose out on getting exactly what you wanted. I'd suggest you make the decision as soon as possible. It's the last one. It's urgency close. Interest rates are going up on Monday, according to the Financial Times. If you're going to need a mortgage bond, you would save by buying today. And if that's a fact, it's in the newspaper, then therefore, it's going to work a whole lot better on an urgency close. The shut-up principle, something like the courtesy one, it's asking for the business. Asking for the business and then being silent. Once you ask for the order, you shut up. The point being made is to allow the other person time to think after you've asked for the business. Being silent puts the responsibility of a response with the other person. 30 seconds of silence can feel like 3 minutes, so it does create some urgency. And if the whole process has been clearly moving towards closure, the silence speeds it up. On that silence one, years ago when I first started owning my own businesses, because I've owned my own businesses, I've had 6-7 years of my adult life where I've actually worked for another company. Otherwise, I've been on my own. And I remember I had a small business and we were in the graphics business and sold photographics. We were short on money, short on capital, like most small businesses, and I thought I would tackle the bank for a loan. And I had a bank that I was dealing with, and I went in to see this bank manager for a loan. And it wasn't a lot of money. I think it was about $10,000 at that time, which I guess was still a fair amount if you didn't have any security. I went to this guy and I said, look, I need 10 grand. Here's what we're doing because we're doing a little bit of, we need to build some supplies here to sell and we've taken on a little place. I need about 10 grand because we're a bit short on the cash flow. The guy looked at it and he said, well, he said, I probably can help you. He said, but you're going to have to put a business plan together. And he says, and here's the following things that I'm going to need. And so the bank laid out all the things that he felt I needed to come back to him with. So I went and I took a couple of weeks and a lot of time and energy. In a lot of cases in small business, we're better off putting the energy into getting clients than trying to borrow money from the bank. Because the same time you take to borrow the money, you could have earned the money in a lot of cases. So I went and put all this work in and I went to the library and I talked to people and I got an accountant to help me with cash flows. And I went through this whole thing and then I come back with everything that he asked for. And I put it in front of him. And he was surprised because I don't think he thought I would do it. And I put it in front of him. And he went through all the stuff and he said, Jesus, looks good, Bill, but there's a couple of other things we're going to need and you're going to have to go do this and this and this. And I said, I have to do that in order to get the money. He said, that's right. So I left and I went and did it. I come back twice with him, with the stuff that he needed. Third time I come in with the stuff, and the night before I had read a book and the guy had talked about the shut up principle. And how long 30 seconds is when you shut up. So I thought, I'm going to try it on this bank manager. And I came in, I put the stuff down in front of him, and sure enough, he said, you know, but there's some other things that we're going to need. And I looked at him and I said, you know, in the time I've put together to try and bring this stuff to you, I probably could have earned the money. And I said, it's not fair. And I got a very simple question for you. Are you going to give me the money? Or aren't you? And I just looked at him like this. Or aren't you? Now, that's only about 10 seconds. I went for over a minute. I didn't speak. I just said nothing. Or aren't you? And he looked at me. And he sit there, and I looked at him. And he couldn't stand looking at these eyeballs anymore. I can't blame him. And then he reached in his desk, pulled out something, put it back in, shuffled through paper, looked at me, shuffled through paper, went back to the desk, looked at the thing, looked at me, and then finally reached in his desk, pulled out a note for me to sign, and put it in front of me. He said, sign that, and you better pay. And that was the close. And it was the shut-up principle that did it. The bonus close, this is where you can utilize an incentive or bonus if they buy right, urgency, or if they buy in a certain way, volume. The close that is sometimes called a bonus close fits comfortably under the urgency category. So, you say, if you buy today, I can give you 12 months free interest on financing. I can give you 12 months free interest, financing. That could be a bonus close. If you take both plans, we'll knock 20% off the price. Bonus close. I can't drop any lower on the price, but if you make the decision to order from us today, we'll pick up the shipping charges. Bonus close. The objection close, this is where you ask the customer if she would agree to buy if you erase her objection. That tent would not hold up to mountain weather. That could be the statement. It will not hold up to mountain weather. Salesperson, if I show you that all the testing was done in the extreme conditions of the mountain, would you take it? And if it's proven that it was, yes. Closing on an objection. There's no way a bank can offer you those terms. If I can get it approved, will you commit to move your business to us? Closing on an objection. Use of terms close where the genuine objection is they can't afford the amount and you offer payment terms. Customer, we do not have $600,000 in our budget. Salesperson, when does your new budget year start? October 1st, we'll take $350 now, $250 on October 15th. How does that sound? Great, let's do it. And so that's use of terms close. The balance sheet close, I'm not sure whether or not we should be outsourcing our maintenance and service work. Let's look at the advantages and the disadvantages. So that's the balance sheet close, the pros and cons. And cover the disadvantages first. Let's look at the pros and cons. The advantages, disadvantages, you could upset the union by people losing their jobs. And also, you know what your people are capable of, but are not sure what we can do. Now, here's the advantages. We can absorb those employees and provide them an opportunity, so they're not going to lose their jobs. You know your exact cost when we're doing it for you. You'll get people that will perform to agreed standards. You receive weekly cost and production output data, and you get all this at less than you're paying right now. And the client says, I can see this advantage. You build up that stacking of pancakes. The third-party close, this is where a third-party person is pulled into transaction to take over or add the value, like Marius did. Could be a sales manager, could be an older person, could be more experienced individual, someone they know, a senior executive, someone with special expertise. Be sure to build the third person's credibility before introducing them. I know some guys that had a kitchen cabinet business, and it was a retail business, so kitchen cabinets. But one was like 24, the other one was 28, and they both looked like they were 18. And they were really young-looking guys. And they had an old guy named Claude that works for them. I say an old guy, he was in his 50s. And often the customers, especially the older customers, would be hesitating to buy from them. And they would look and they would say, you know, would you like to talk to Claude? Because he's been around the industry a lot longer than us. And they'd say, well, we don't mean to insult you, but we would feel more comfortable talking to Claude. And Claude actually worked for these guys. And Claude would come over and take over. And really, that was a third party close. Mr. Reed will finalize the details with you. He's our financial director. Third party close. Mr. LaRue will show you exactly how this can be done in 2 weeks. That way we've got it out of the way and we can then get on with the project. My sales manager has the authority to make those kind of concessions. Let me bring him here. That's the third person moving in on the deal. The summary close is where you summarize the buying points on what was discussed, okay, leading to asking for the business. On each point, it's great if you can get a positive or yes response. So that's where you move through. You say, let me just summarize what we've discussed. I want to go back through what we discussed. We agreed that we would give you the performance agreement you wanted. Correct. We also agreed that one of your engineers could sit on the project team. The investment would be over 3 budget years. You get a month-end summary every month, and that we have a track record second to none. And if you're happy, we'd be glad to send you the contract for your turn as you look over. Customer says, send it. Similar situation close. Mr. Jones, XYZ Assurance Company, had a similar situation. They'd just taken over another company. They found that by launching a similar intervention at that time, it pulled the people from both companies together. This succeeded because our unbiased outside organization presented the new ways of doing business. So you can use that similar situation. And the empathy close is where you beg. Okay. Mr. Strauss, you and I have put a lot of effort into this possible project, and it seems to me you're going to go forward. I'm under continued pressure by our project coordination department to try and finalize our agreements. A yes from you would take a lot of heat off me. And the consultant close, this is where you have such credibility with the client that the client relies on you and your advice for direction on the buy. And a lot of us have clients that have us up in that consultant role in the way that they take a look at us. So the customer, you know more about this than I do. The customer says, you're the expert. I'm not sure what to do. Salesperson says, look, take a key person, put them on the project for 2 years to be the champion, implement modules 1 to 6 this year, do the balance next year. Customer says, if you believe, that's the best. That's what I'll do. And we all do have clients that just rely on us as the person with the expertise, and that's called the consultant close. Closing is not always closing a sale. It can be closing for the next appointment or the next step. We often forget that. All of these closes work in our personal life. If you want to go out on Friday night, do you say, do you want to go somewhere Friday night? Or do you say, look, there's a really good movie on. There's also, they're having a dinner party over at so-and-so's place. Or this has also happened. Which one would you like to go to? It's the alternative close on a personal level, isn't it? So you actually can take these and use them. So closing can be for an appointment. In a long sales cycle selling, you're not closing very many deals. What you're doing is closing the next appointment, closing the next step forward on what we do. Be ready to close at any time the signal's there and know when to close. Ask leading questions and then listen. Watch for favorable reactions and keep testing and exploring where the process is at. Get a succession of agreements when you can. Bring up extra value-added points and reminders and use the right close for the right situation. If you can't close the transaction, try at least to get the customer to agree on another appointment. Thank them for investing time with you, and if we've been sincere, really uncovered and filled needs, closing is a natural step. Certain closes are meant for certain situations. Learn to read the customer and the situation and use the appropriate close. And above all, when receiving the money from customers or having the order signed, look them in the eye and say thank you. And also say to people, that was a good decision. That's a good decision. That looks good on you. I think you picked out the best for what you were looking for. It's always a nice feeling when that happens. I walked into an A&B Sound store a number of years ago, a retail store, in Victoria, British Columbia, Canada, where I lived at that time. And I come through the door, and there was a young woman that greeted me. And she said, as I come through the door, she looked at me, and she was really cute. She said, is there anything specific you're looking for today? She didn't say, may I help you? She says, is there anything specific you're looking for today? And I said, yes, I'm looking for a set of headphones for my Walkman. And she said, okay. You need a set of headphones for your Walkman. I said, that's right. She said, follow me. They're right over here. But the way she did it, she said, just follow me. They're right over here. And she turned like that. I followed her. And I was walking behind her. I said, by the way, excuse me, I've only got $20 to spend. She turned around and looked at me and she said, why is that? Now, that was the first time anybody had done that to me. So I wasn't ready for that one. Okay, and I didn't want to tell her that my wife only gave me $20 to spend. And so I said, the reason why I only got $20 is I travel a lot on jet planes, and I'm on the road, and I'm on the road so much with this stuff, these headphones are sort of like sunglasses. Sunglasses, I either lose them, or I sit on them and break them. And so I don't like to spend a lot of money on sunglasses. So same thing for headphones. She said, that makes sense. And she said, I think this is what you need here. And she pulled these headphones off the shelf. And they didn't look like $20 headphones. And she said, I think this is what you need. See, the hinges on these, and they were COS headphones. She said, they fold, see, like this. And the chances of them breaking are very, very low. And she said, not only that, she said, but these headphones are probably the most comfortable set of headphones you will have ever had on in your life. And I said, you think so? She said, yes, try them on. And she put them on my head. And she said, jump up and down. Now, this was a really busy store. But she was really cute, and I would have done anything she suggested. So I start jumping up and down, and these hold really nice on my head. She said, do you exercise? And I said, well, I've been thinking about it. And she said, well, you'll find that if you exercise, you're running, these aren't going to bounce around on you at all. And then she plugged them in. The sound was phenomenal. And I looked at her and she looked at me and I said, $20? And she smiled. You must smile at people when you do this to them. She said, no, not $20. She said, $49.95. I said, you rascal. I said, you hand me that $20 set of headphones. So she found a set and she tossed them to me. She said, try them on. I put them on my head. She said, jump up and down. They flip-flopped. They didn't fit right. She plugged them in. They were a third of the sound of these other headphones. And she said, I know you didn't plan on spending that extra $20. She said, but look at the difference here. For the extra 20, not for the $49.95, for the extra 20, there's a one-year warranty on these headphones, and if anything happens to them and you bring them back, we'll replace them. And she said, not only that, but you fly a lot on jet planes, don't you? And I said, I sure do. She said, you ever try to listen to your music on a jet plane with the engines roaring with a cheap set of headphones? Doesn't work real well. She said, you won't have any trouble with the sound with these ones. And she says, and they got the hinges, they fold, the chance of them breaking are very low. She said, I think it's probably worth the extra $20. What do you think? And I said, I think you're correct. I went from 20 to 50 bucks just like that. And I gave her my 50 bucks. She wouldn't take my money. She left it standing there. And she said, tell me something. What do you carry your Walkman in? I said, I've got a little case on the side. No, I said, what it is that the Walkman has a hook over the back. It goes over my belt like this, and that's where it stays, see? And she said, great, but have you ever bent over to get in a car seat or pick something up? It hits the bottom of your Walkman, flips it up off the belt, and it's fallen on the floor. I said, it's happened. She said, that could be pretty expensive. I said, it sounds like it's going to get real expensive. She said, how many tapes do you like to carry with you when you travel? I said, 4 or 5 tapes. She said, well, this case here will hold 4 or 5 tapes and an average size Walkman. I said, how much? She said, only $30. I said, I'll take it. I went from 20 to 50 to 80 bucks like that. And then I said, please take my money. And she said, one more question. I said, what's that? She said, you ever been laying in your hotel room listening to your music with your Walkman? And all of a sudden, your batteries go dead. I said, it's happened. She said, then you have to run down to the kiosk in the hotel or to a little cafe, convenience store, and you pay an absolute fortune for batteries because they charge big bucks in those places for batteries. I said, it's happened. She said, we have a battery sale this week. Would you like a set of batteries? I said, I'll take them. I said, now take my money. And as she was taking my money, she began to laugh. And she said to me, I guess you won't be back this way for quite some time, will you? I said, you got that one absolutely correct. She said, then maybe you should take an extra set of batteries. Now, how many people here like to have her working for you? And see, what I'm going to say here is that we may not need more customers. We may need more business from the customers that we have. The sessions that I did on personal marketing and personal and corporate marketing advertising, and I did a session there on permission-based marketing. And one of the new things today, and that we always think in sales, we happen to talk, what is our market share? We need more sales, we need more market share. Today, we're often saying, we don't need more market share, we don't need more sales, we need more of the customer's wallet. We need more of the portion of your spend. In other words, and that's why that frequency stuff is so important. So here's some thoughts. From develop to retain, if you got that retain, you got develop, regain, and gain. So how do you get them from develop to retain? Well, upsells, add-ons, match selling, cross-selling is usually what takes a client from the gain column and develop columns of the ABCs of selling to the retain column. That's why needs analysis is important. That's why it's good to get to know the customers. You go from not being the supplier of preference to the supplier of preference. So maximize an additional sales opportunities. Upselling, that's what she did with me, isn't it? I went in there, I had $20 to spend. She upsold me into a set of headphones that were $50. So that would be called an upsell. Then on top of that, what she did is she then did some add-on selling, didn't she? Because that's an upsell, and there's a tendency, we all call everything cross-selling, but it's not cross-selling. She upsold, and then after you've made the initial sale, the main thing the person wants, you do the add-ons. And she had me put $100 out when I went in there to spend $20, which shows you how much is often sitting in the consumer's pocket if we take and we handle it properly. And it was what I needed. I mean, she actually picked up on it that I could afford it and that I would take it. So let's just talk about a few of these. From an upselling point of view, when you take a look at that upselling, what in your business, how often do you upsell? Or when somebody says, I want this, you just accept that. And part of the times that we just accept it, we don't ask questions. Okay? They say, I need this. You say, great, we'll look after that, but just let me ask you a few questions. This camera that you want to buy, who's going to use it? Just you? What are you going to use it for? How often will you use it? Okay, are you also going to shoot black and white? How much indoor shooting are you going to do? How much outdoor? Are you trying to get close to the animals? Are you doing the game farms? And you start working with it and you ask the questions and all of a sudden, what are you saying to the person? You say, let me just show you another camera here that may suit your need just a little better, and it goes from $2,000 to $3,000. But it's not the idea that I get more money out of you. It's the idea that I find out what it is that you really do need, and I put it together for you. Now, clipboard selling. What's that? Clipboard selling is add-on selling. Where clipboard selling comes from, and it's a little thing that we coined, and it came from the building supply business. And we found that when we were working with some building supply operators around clipboard selling, a lot of the guys and people that worked, the staff that worked in the building supply operations, didn't feel like salespeople. Didn't feel like salespeople. Because they were very good with lumber, they were very good with equipment, they were very good with building supplies, but they said, I don't feel comfortable trying to upsell these people. Bill, we're not salesmen like you. So what I said to him, if I can show you how to upsell and do add-ons without you feel like you're doing it, will you do it? I said, that sounds good. What do you got in mind? And what we did is we put together a clipboard. So what we did is we said, what are the main things that people come in to buy in a building supply operation? And one of the things was doors. So what we said is that when somebody comes in to buy a door, you ask a lot of questions, you help them find a door. That's what you do. And after they've selected the door, then you say, while I'm getting this ready for you, I want you to just take this clipboard here and check down through the items. Because there's nothing worse than buying something at a building supply dealership and getting home with it and you don't have enough stuff to finish the job properly. Who would agree? So what we've done is we've done a little clipboard. So just check through to make sure that you got everything you need. So everything related to doors would be door locks, door hinges, door lights, doormats, door handles, extra door keys, door bars, and whatever else you can think of around doors. And they would hand that to him. The guy would go, put the door together, come back and say, how'd you make out? Take the clipboard and do a quick review. 90% of the time, that person would tick something else they need. How often do we need keys that we don't bother to get another set of keys done, but we've been meaning to do it? That's clipboard selling. In Canada, we have what you call lucky dollar stores. They're like a spar. It's halfway between the average little cafe and a spar. They're not that big. And I had a lucky dollar store guy on a program, one of our owner development programs, and one of his issues and problems was, he said, Bill, can you help me? He said, and it wasn't a big store, and it was a little community. He said, I got about 450 customers a day that come through my store. He said, they're spending on an average of $8.50, I think it was, per purchase. How do I get it up? How do I get that average up? I said, probably quite simple. So what we did, as you come up to the cash register, there's nothing worse. You get in the lineup for a cash register to buy something. There's somebody behind you. Do you feel like going back and grabbing another item? Most of us feel uncomfortable. So once you're there at the cash and you get your money on that counter, there's no chance of you going back. So what we did is we built some retail posters that sit, and they're a fairly big size, but they were made into a shopping list. And on the top of the shopping list, as you come up, it says, we didn't want you to forget anything. Check before you get in the lineup. And you look and it says razor blades. It says light bulbs. It says toothpaste. It says all the little things that we often don't have. And you're standing there and you check, think, gee, razor blades, I need those. Gee, my wife's been after me to put a light bulb in that bathroom. I need light bulbs. And automatically worked. Now, we took it further than that, and we took that same kind of sign and put it on several places on the wall where customers could see the shopping list, and then we built a little holder and then made a little shopping list about this size that they could reach and pick the shopping list up. And there was a little pencil there that was, you know, the kind you use for mini golf or sometimes on the golf course, those little cheap pencils that you can get, so that they could take those pencils, and as they walked around, they could tick these things off. Within a week, they went from an average of $8.50 per customer to over $12 a customer on an average with that process. So sometimes what we do, we just don't have processes and systems of making sure that we've really taken the client and we've asked the questions as we take and work it through. Focus selling, which we talked about the focus approach when somebody walks in. And restaurants do focus selling extremely well because you'll walk in and it'll say special of the day, doesn't it? The waiter will walk over on a Friday night and you're out for dinner and say, well, look, just before I do it, can I just tell you about our specials? What are they doing? Focus selling. They sell a lot more of those specials than they would if they didn't tell us about it. So what's the focus? So focus selling. By the way, while you're here, check out the special we have on this. And it's how you design and put things together. In a retail store, I own a furniture store that I was doing some work with, and I said, look, why don't you make a special spot? Why don't you raise it up and build a nice little platform here and make it look pretty? Put some nice carpet there. And then put a sofa up here. Put a little coffee table. Put some lamps there. Okay, put a nice little sign. And then that becomes the focal point. So when people walk in, you say, by the way, while you're here, check out the special we got on this little sofa set. You may not be in the market for it, but you might know somebody else that is. Just have a look at it. You know how many you move by doing that? Of taking the time to mention it and not assume that somebody doesn't want it. That's focus selling. By the way, selling is very simple. By the way, before you leave. By the way, while you're here. It's just a nice way of saying it. Match selling really is the packaging of things, isn't it? And that you're taking, you match things together. I've gone into it, and again, I've got some building supply people here and hardware, where often you find things put apart from each other. But if you've got lumber over here and you got this, well, then let's also put some of the tools that you would take and work with in the same spot. I've gone in where we've gone and we've built, because they had lots of space, and we built little rooms. And each little room in the place was devoted to a certain area and things were matched up. You know, that's like when you have in a business, you say, we have a starter package. That's match selling. Because you put several things together. It's no different than in a clothing place. You go in and you take a look at the mannequin, and it's got a nice suit there, but it also has a tie that you really like and a shirt, but you only came to buy the suit. But because of the match selling, you take the shirt, the tie, and the suit. And it was because they took and how they matched it up. Downselling is also important. You don't always upsell. A lot of times we lose business because we're upselling too quick when we should be downselling somebody. Somebody comes in and looks at a vehicle and they're looking really excited about it, but then when they get the price, you can see that they're way over their head. And a lot of times if you upsell and get somebody excited about something they can't afford, they're too embarrassed to tell you and they go somewhere else and buy it at a lower price. And cross-selling and cross-marketing, that is where you take advantages of your relationships with other business, other people, other departments. You know, in automobile dealers, they don't cross-sell enough between the service department and the sales department. I know of businesses, some of the car dealerships have taken, and they've actually put a sales desk right in the service department for guys to sit there and work. Because what do? They get a chance to meet some of the people.
Go to your manual and utilize the exercises to help you receive maximum benefit from this module. Thank you for listening.